Joanne, it's 12:32. I'm speaking with Bea Wilson, talking to her about her new book. It's called First Bite. It is about learning to eat and, in many cases, relearning to eat. The phone number, 514-597-4500, toll-free. It's 1-877-597-4500. Bea Wilson, you've agreed to stay with us for about 3 more minutes. I'm going to just rush to one more call here, if that's okay with you. We're going to go to Helen, who's calling from Hampstead. Hi, Helen.
Hi.
What did you want to talk about?
I was told by someone, I don't remember when, that tastes change about every 7 years. So my youngest daughter didn't like peanut butter for a long time. And then at 14, one day she said, "Mom, can I have a peanut butter sandwich?" And forever since then, she's loved peanut butter. For me, I changed my eating by only eating a palm full of protein, the same for carbs. And then the rest of my plate is whatever vegetable I have.
Now, does that feel to you like deprivation? Does that feel like something that you're sort of doing happily, or is it difficult for you when you do that?
No, it's fine, because before, when I was eating, I would be so full, I would be stuffed, you know, like to the point of undoing your pants button, okay? I lost 30 pounds like that without even working at it. And I eat until I'm full. That's it. I don't eat anymore. But
wow.
I eat everything. I eat whatever I want. One day a week is my Cosmos breakfast day. Eggs, bacon, hash browns, toast. Okay? But I also don't have to eat until supper time that day because there's so much food.
Helen, thanks for the call. That's Helen in Hampstead. Bea Wilson, we will close out for real here. Maybe I can just get you to react to Helen in Hampstead. I think for people listening, the lingering issue here might be that it seems much easier to talk about all this than to do this. Helen talks about making this pretty dramatic change in the way she eats and just totally changing her relationship, only eating enough, not overeating. Can you sort of leave us with a little bit more hope about how to do that?
Yeah, I mean, all of these are skills that we can master. It's just we sometimes think that we can't. We become very fatalistic about our own eating habits. And her example shows you can absolutely recondition your relationship with hunger. She clearly wouldn't enjoy eating to the point where she was as full as she was before. But I think the thing to say is it sounds like, I mean, a lot of your listeners might be thinking, oh, I'll never get that. That's not me. That's obviously just her. And that's how I used to think back in my compulsive eating days. I'd think I'd never reach that kind of before and after photograph. I would never be in the after stage. But it takes lots and lots of slow, persistent effort. But the good news is that you don't get there through denial. You don't get there through going on a diet. It's lots of little changes that you learn, as with Helen, that you can live with that actually make life a bit better. It's kind of not beating yourself up, but knowing it's possible, I think, is a big thing. I hope so, anyway.
Bea Wilson, it really has been a pleasure speaking with you and reading your book, and thanks for coming on here.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is Bea Wilson. She's the author of a book called First Bite, How We Learn to Eat. She was speaking to us from England, her home. And we're going to carry on with this topic for the next 20 minutes or so. And by the way, we are going to give out a copy of the book to somebody who calls into the show, somebody who is brave enough to come on and tell their story. So let me tell you how to do that. 514-597-4500 or toll-free. It's 1-877-597-4500. There are also some other ways to reach us. Facebook is CBC Montreal. Twitter is at CBC Radio Noon. So some people have tweeted in. One person, Janet, has tweeted in a whole bunch of tweets about spinach. She says spinach is a food that she has learned to love. Spinach in an omelet with cheese, onions, and tomatoes. She says cabbage chopped and sautéed with lots of garlic and olive oil. She also says presentation counts. Mom served cabbage and spinach limp and boiled. Disgusting. Spinach in an omelet. Divine, says Janet. Thank you very much for the tweets, Janet. And again, the Twitter handle here is at CBC Radio Noon. We're getting some Facebook comments as well. Here's Helen. Helen says, "I'm a picky eater, and she says, I've always been one. I enjoyed most of my mother's cooking. I have elder siblings, but they weren't around. She says she grows over time, though. She's learning to eat more different things. Used to hate tomato sauce, not anymore. I'm still picky, but I'm getting better. She says that the book seems interesting, and she says it sounds like there are psychological ties linked to picky eaters, for sure. And if you read the book, you're going to see a lot more about, you know, your relationship to food and how the food might be sort of, in some cases, replacing something else. Bea Wilson, in fact, talks about her divorced father and how he would sort of hand her a certain kind of snack food as she was getting on the train after a visit with him after the separation. And she says she sort of always instinctively reached for that same food every time she was getting on a train. Until she figured out, until she thought about it, until she sort of realized and looked at the pattern and looked at the relationship that she was having with that kind of food. So it's really, really interesting stuff. We're asking you today, how did you learn to love a food? If you want to talk as well about how you sort of relearned to eat in a different way, I'd love to hear about that as well. It's 514-597-4500, toll-free 1-877-597-4500. Leslie Chesterman is on the line. She's the fine dining critic for the Montreal Gazette. And Leslie Chesterman, I guess as the fine dining critic, it means from a very early age, you just loved everything, right?
No, absolutely not, because I was a very picky eater as a kid. I was a massive eater. I just ate constantly. But I was such a picky eater. So now I have two kids, and they're both picky eaters in very different ways, which is a disaster at mealtimes. But you know, I really understand them because I was there myself.
Now, tell me about them as picky eaters.
Well, I have one child who will not eat fruit. He won't eat any fruit. He won't even eat a strawberry. I have another little boy who does not like any fat on anything he eats. So that is just off limits completely. Anything like rapini, forget it. Anything bitter. I served a beautiful dish with fennel the other day. They didn't touch it. I think one of them takes every single little bit of onion out of his food and puts it on the side of his plate. So I just sit there. And I can't yell at them. I mean, I don't think I would have eaten rapini at their age, and I didn't like too many onions in my food either. So you have to go slowly with kids, and you have to understand, and I think by just yelling at them gets you nowhere.
Which is exactly what Bea Wilson says in the book. But on the other hand, she says what is important is making sure that the exposure is still there. I don't know if you were listening in the previous part of the show, but she talked about this tiny taste concept where you give tiny, almost pea-sized or even a sort of one piece of rice-sized bits of the food that the child thinks that they have an aversion to, and eventually, but over not very much time at all, the taste sort of changes. That's maybe what she's saying we should be doing. I wonder, and that is totally not what I did with my kids. I did all the wrong things, but when they won't eat anything, what do? Do you just sort of sit on the sidelines?
Okay, so what you have to, I agree with what she said. Apparently kids have to eat things about 15 times before they can adopt them or refuse them. It takes that many times to taste them before they're willing to accept a new flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget that I did a story about a woman who wrote a book about bitter foods, and bitter foods are very difficult for a lot of people to handle if they have a highly developed palate. And there are some people that are called super tasters. So I actually did this test where, you know, you put this piece of paper on your tongue, and if it tastes very bitter, you're a super taster, and some people taste nothing at all. It doesn't mean that you're a better taster or not. It just means you're more sensitive. And I had both of my kids do this, too, and the one of them who was much more picky was more of a super taster than the one who wasn't. You know, there's also texture. We don't talk a lot about texture. Something like spinach, something like fat on meat. This is often a problem with textures with kids. And even with adults, you know, we talk all the time about kids, but I find more and more I'm eating out with adults who are not willing to taste certain dishes, who say, oh, I don't want this, I don't want that. So, you know, we always think it's kids, but it's kind of everybody. There are some things I don't like. I mean, now I've grown to like a lot of things over the years, because when I was about 30, I still didn't eat cheese or fish, really, before I really had to for restaurant reviewing. Now I love fish and cheese.
Yeah. Is there anything that you still just do not like?
I don't like sea urchin. And it's funny because I never thought about not liking sea urchin, but I was eating with another restaurant critic years ago, and she said, oh, please, I don't like sea urchin. And I never really thought about it. And then it kind of stuck in my head. And sea urchin is so rare and expensive, so I just say to people, don't bother giving me sea urchin because it's wasted on me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, if there's one thing that you're just not going to like, that's a pretty good one because it's not sort of a staple that you're going to encounter over and over again.
Yeah, these strong flavors, monkfish liver, I don't like monkfish liver, things that are extremely fishy. I'm not going to eat sardines out of a can, which a lot of people love. I'll never do that in my life. I've given it a real try, but things that are too overly fishy, I think I have a very sensitive palate, but I like extremely stinky cheese, you know, so it's a matter. I also think things like spinach, you have to give kids time, you know, don't expect them to like everything at once. Just give them a few years and get them involved in the cooking, because I have noticed that if I get my kids cooking with me, suddenly if they chop the onion, they're not taking it out of the food. So that's, I think, the best advice you can give. If you really want to, you have
that's
to
interesting.
Do things to your kids all the time, but don't force everything on them at once.
Yeah.
You're kind of wasting your time, and you'll end up throwing a lot of things out and having fights at the table.
Let me ask you one last question about yourself. I will also tell you before I ask the question, if you do not want to answer this question, that's okay too. But
okay.
Do you now, because eating is what you do professionally, do you eat just when you're hungry, or do you eat in the way that some of us do as sort of a crutch?
I eat for pleasure. So I eat when I'm hungry, as we all do. I don't eat necessarily emotionally, but I certainly eat for pleasure. And since I like having a lot of pleasure, I eat way too much. But for me, food, you know, some people will shoe shop. Some people will buy a beautiful car. You know, food is my thing. Food is what I love. But I become very picky about food just because I want it to be good. So it doesn't have to be caviar. If it's going to be something like cabbage, I love cabbage, but it has to be beautifully prepared. And not even expensively, just well done. I think the best thing you can learn to do is to cook, and that way you become picky, and you don't eat things that are bad. Being picky should be more about looking for things that are well cooked, that are quality, instead of, you know, I won't eat a cinnamon bun at IKEA. But I love cinnamon buns, you know, but I'm going to wait for that one that's really good instead of stuffing my face with a bunch of stuff that, you know, are kind of mediocre.
Leslie Chesterman, it is always great to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. That's Leslie Chesterman, who is the fine dining critic for the Montreal Gazette. And she talks about cooking as one of the keys here. If you sort of cook a lot, cook your own food. And one of the things that I didn't get to mention when we were speaking with B. Wilson is the end of her book, which she calls This Is Not Advice. And basically what she is thinking is, you know, because she spends a fair bit of the book saying that you should not hector other people about what they eat or what they do not eat. It is not going to work. So that at the end she says, well, here are some things you might think about. It's not advice, because she doesn't want to be hectoring people. One of the things there is no one is too busy to cook, says B. Wilson. And again, I cannot recommend this book enough. Really, really an interesting book. The numbers here, 514-597-4500. Toll free, it's 1-877-597-4500. We're talking about your relationship with food. If you want to narrow it down a little bit, we're talking about a food you maybe didn't love as a child but learned to love as an adult. Or you could talk about the complete other direction. You could talk about a food that you just retained some childhood love for. You know, you loved it, you had it for the first time when you were two, and now it brings you back to a certain place, and you love that. Either way, let's go back to the phone lines. Let's go to Sylvia, who's calling from Marieville. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi.
What did you want to talk about?
I guess it's a very interesting topic, because I'm in I'm in that dilemma right now. I'm just coming to the end of cancer treatment. I actually have my last one tomorrow.
Oh, that's good.
During the treatment, my sweet tooth became, like, insatiable. But yesterday I said, that's it. I'm getting back on the I'm getting back into exercise. And I did. I did 30 minutes on the treadmill, and I felt great and stayed away from sugar for the whole day. And I guess that's where I stand.
Okay.
From childhood, I really hate red beets, and I still don't like them.
I hear that so much. I can't remember if I liked them or not as a kid. I do love them now. Not crazy about preparing them, because everything gets so red and it's so hard to peel them. Mm. By the way, if anybody has a tip for the best way to peel a beet, text message line 514-566-9066. But I love eating them. I have to say, B. Wilson in the book, she spends a lot of time as well talking about beets, because that is another one where people do have that kind of weird relationship with, them. Yeah. She also says, by the way, so it sounds like you're on the right track with that, she definitely puts a link between exercising, which it sounds like you sort of did. You said you got back on the treadmill. So she says exercising, for whatever reason, seems to go hand in hand with making it easier to eat the healthy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know from when I was younger that is actually the case. You don't eat as much, and your body, I guess, craves the things that it should crave, like vegetables and the good stuff. I didn't have the problem when I was younger, and I just work it out now.
Any foods you still really hate?
Beets.
just beets. Yeah.
Yeah, really. I don't think there's really anything else that I don't care for.
All right, we're gonna try to get you to love beets. If anybody has like the best beet recipe in the world, guaranteed success. Would you be willing to try it?
Probably not. Even
no way.
When I was a kid, I had a cat, and I loved this cat. Every time we had red beets, I made sure he was under the table, and he actually ate them for me.
Are you serious?
Yes.
So you could lie to us right now. You could say I will try it, and then you just would have another cat around and. We'd be wasting our time.
Or a dog.
Okay, so I'm not even going to bother. But listen, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Good to speak with you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
That's Sylvia calling from Marieville. Again, the number's here. It's 514-597-4500. And the toll-free number, it's 1-877-597-4500. I see we're getting some suggestions on the text message line for the best way to peel a beet. Maybe my next guest also has some suggestions around that. Naveen Altribini is a healthy cooking instructor who we have spoken to. We spoke to a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about pulse crops, and Naveen joins me again right now. Hi, Naveen.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Well, really good to have you on here. So we're talking about relationships with food. We're talking about, to get us started here with an easy question, do you have a food that you didn't like as a kid that you sort of learned later on to love?
Yes, absolutely. I was also a bit of a fussy eater. I would say okra, because in my culture we have okra and it's a little bit mushy the way they prepare it. It's like in a tomato sauce and has a very funny look and sort of squishy feeling to it.
Yeah, B. Wilson also writes about okra in the book, and she talks about the texture of it.
The texture. So basically, I think I would sum it up by okra and other such textures. Zucchini also was done in a very kind of, you know, soft, mushy kind of way. And what I've discovered is that, you know, if I prepare them in the way that I like them, I have totally no problem with the taste of them. It was just the way they were prepared. I think one of your speakers also talked about textures.
Yeah.
As being, you know, some people like their vegetables a little bit more crunchy and crisp, and others like them, you know, really, really mushy and overcooked. So for me, that was what it was, that I was able to fix okra and now eat it.
Now, do you have anything that's sort of in the other column of food that you have not learned to love?
That I have not learned to love. I'm one of the least fussy eaters now, considering that I was fussy. There are textures I don't like. There are ways some foods are prepared that I like less, but like I said, when I find ways to prepare them, for example, beets, I don't appreciate them as much like in raw salads, but we were talking about beets before. I put some beets in my hummus. I make a beet sort of dip, and I love it that way. I also like it with sweet potatoes in a soup, for example. But I don't prefer it, you know, raw in my salad.
Naveen, I want to ask you also here a little bit about relationships with food. So I'm not talking about a particular food, right? Let's just sort of put the beet aside here for a second, or the okra aside. But just the whole sort of concept of eating when hungry as opposed to eating when there's food in front of you or when you reach for food. I grew up, I really hope my mom's not listening, but I sort of grew up in an environment where my mom would fill the plate, and if we didn't finish the plate, she would ask what's wrong, and then if we did finish it, she would sort of encourage us to have seconds of the food. So that's kind of how I eat now, which is not a great way to eat. I'm just wondering how many people can relate to that kind of thing, and I'm wondering, does that sound familiar to you at all?
Yeah, absolutely. In my culture as well, it's shameful not to eat and eat more and finish your plate. There's the factor of finishing, and there's the waste, and we don't waste and we don't insult people by not eating. So you learn that kind of behavior, and it stays with you. But like some of your other speakers mentioned before, there's hope because we could learn to unlearn that behavior.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. We can learn to unlearn.
Yeah. You know, and what are the tricks that I use now? Is I actually use a smaller plate for myself, and I try to heap it up with a lot of vegetables. But because our brain still sees a full plate, you still feel like you got a big serving, even though it's a smaller serving. Trick your brain, and that's one way I finish my plate. It's just that the plate is actually smaller.
That's really smart.
Yeah, so that's one way. And what I like to do too is I like, since we associated, like you said, the candy with not feeling, when we don't feel good, we have candy.
Yeah.
Sugar makes us feel good. I like to create experiences, positive new experience and memories on, linking healthy and wholesome and nice meals to new experiences and new memories that we're going to remember.
That is so interesting. We could probably talk for an hour just about that, but can you give me 30 seconds on how you might go about that?
Well, just in my cooking experiences with people, when I help people with their cooking, we make wonderful food together. We try to have fun. We enjoy the meal. We remove stress. We incorporate a couple of new, vegetables. We learn a bit of history about them. There's a lot of, sometimes there's even little cute stories, and we enjoy ourselves. One experience like this I remember that I absolutely loved is we just took artichokes and we steamed them and we served them on a plate. Like, it looked like a beautiful flower, and we made a beautiful marinade with just olive oil and lemon juice. And we sat down and we ate them, by just dipping each leaf into the marinade. And we just had such a joy around such a simple, simple food that took about 15 minutes to prepare.
I mean, that sounds so delicious. We'll end there on that really delicious note. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good to talk with you. That's Naveen El-Chabini, who is a healthy cooking instructor based in the West Island. We're going to try to squeeze in a couple more calls here. Let's go to Jim, who's calling from Lachine. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you today?
Pretty well. How about you?
Great, great, great subject. Love listening to it. Big fan of cooking. And I think education is so important. It seems like as we get older, cooking is more important. It's something we do 3-4 times a day. And my big problem is I enjoy cooking, but it's trying to find the time. And I think that's our major dilemma, is finding the time to actually, it is very time consuming. And with everybody's busy schedule, everybody rather buy prepared foods are getting more popular. But I think is to educate the education, and now and with the internet we could find out so many great recipes. Like, I find it so much fun to just, even with Facebook, there's tons of great suggestions and way to prepare things, and that's I think the main thing is education, and
yeah, good point for sure.
Yeah. And I find Brussels sprouts. We were talking about Brussels sprouts. I found a recipe that you shred it with other vegetables and just shred it like a slaw, and just add any marination you want, any kind of dressing, and it turned out so good because I remember Brussels sprouts being so, the texture was so awful.
Yeah,
so,
I think that's something that I do not remember not liking. I think I always did, but. Maybe I'm blocking something up. Yeah.
But again, sometimes I cook differently for my kids than I do for myself. I'm trying to incorporate it, them eating the same as me, but I am drastically into other things, and they're at that age of 18 and 13. They like their comfort food. So I'm trying to, like the woman said, gradually push them toward.
Yeah, increase the exposure. Jim, thank you for the call. We're going to go to one last caller here. We're going to Bay Durfee. Kim's on the line. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
What do you want to talk about?
Oh, I have a great story for not picking up food. My mom tells a little story, and then I want to talk a little bit about allergies and food that develop later. But my mom tells a story. She was a young mom, maybe had me at 19. I was still very young, being fed in the high chair. And she'd just done her hair in the old way, where there was all the big curlers and the bouffant and the makeup. She was going out, and the babysitter was coming over. She'd forgotten to kind of make me dinner. So she whipped up some scrambled eggs and started feeding me, and I hated it so much I spat it out at her, and I got it all over her, and she was so mad that I'd done that because she was all ready to go out that she put eggs in her mouth and spat it back at me. Huh. And I still, to this day, do not like eggs.
Which totally makes sense, given the story. Listen, I got to let you go because we're totally out of time, but thank you so much for that.
Thanks.
Okay, that's Kim calling from Bay Durfee. Nancy Wood is here. Nancy's in for Deborah Arbic and going to be hosting on CBC Montreal News 6 p.m. tonight. Nancy, we've been talking all about foods you've learned to love. Do you have one?
Brussels sprouts a little bit because my husband cooks them really well.
Okay.
I grew up in a family where they were boiled to death.
Yeah.
I still haven't learned to like Jerusalem artichokes.
Okay.
Well,
good luck with that.
Go. Yeah.
If that's one and it's one you're not encountering all that much,
I have learned to like beets. That's big.
I've got all these texts in from people about the best way to peel them. Everyone seems to be, the consensus is coalescing around baking or cooking first, then cool off and peel.
Yeah.
All right. What's on the news tonight?
Well, you know, we tend to forget about it because we've been doing it for so many years, 26 years now of Black History Month. But it is Black History Month. It's starting off today. Our reporter is going to be live at Le Grand Bibliothèque. And we're talking particularly about the underrepresentation of minorities at various levels of government, municipal and provincial.
Thanks, Nancy. That's Nancy Wood, in for Deborah Arbeck on CBC Montreal News. That's on 6 p.m. tonight on your TVs. That's it for us here at Radio Noon. If you have any thoughts about today's show, suggestions for future shows, our email, it's radnoonm@cbc.ca. Have a great day, and I'll speak to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.